you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
You're listening to Believe You Me with Michael the Count Bisbing.
You know my name yet?
And Anthony Lionheart Smith.
All right. I think we're recording, Harrington. You look all upset. You found out that Michael Bisbing wasn't going to be here today. So he actually had to step in and do some goddamn real work and do the heavy lifting. That's okay. I think
I'm upset that he was kidnapped by spiders and I don't know what we're going to do.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. He's probably swimming with those big ass crocodiles and doing all the crazy Australian stuff. Anyways, welcome to the BYM. Michael is in Australia. He was ready to do the show and he's having some connection issues. So you're stuck with us today. How have you been, Harrington? What's going on in your life?
Dude, I've been good. Nothing too crazy going on. Just still on pregnancy watch any day now, waiting for the kid to come out. What about you? What do you do?
It's any day now.
Well, I mean, we're like a month out, so it literally could be any day from now.
Right. Yeah. Right. Look at that. Look at you. You're about to be a goddamn adult, man. I'm excited for you. Look, dude, Michael's not here, so I'm drinking out of a straw.
That's what everybody's been telling me. It's like you like, I've had people with kids in my life being like, oh, I'm about to be able to respect you. Like, this is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, you're one of us now.
Almost. Let's see how long it lasts first before we start giving you credit.
Whoa. Alex is going to take great care of my kid. Knock it off.
Oh, I think he was talking about how long you were going to stick around.
Oh, no. He got it. He got it.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. So I'm here. It's a snow day here in Nebraska. We, you know, they always say it's going to snow and they cancel school and then nothing ever happens. But I woke up this morning to 2 feet of snow. So I've been snow blowing all day long.
Do you got one of the riding snow blowers? You're out there pushing?
No. Well, I mean, it's self-propelled. You know, it's got the little handles and anyways, it's fun. I mean, the neighbors get out there and we just snow blow the whole neighborhood. So, here in Nebraska, when there's a snow day, also means you get to start drinking early. So having me a Moscow meal while we're sitting here. If you guys hear any weird noises during the show, don't get too nervous because we have chicks, like little chickens that we hatched. So we had 3 chickens hatch yesterday. I'm sure that no one gives a fuck about that, but they got this little incubator right outside my door here with the little heaters and stuff on them. So got little baby chicks running around here, Harrington.
Dude, that's the new workaround. With eggs being $12 a dozen at this point, just buy a chicken. It's cheap.
I'm telling you, we just hatched about $47 worth of eggs. It's crazy. So,
dude,
yeah, we got
Smith
some
egg
chicks.
Farms.
Dude, I'm telling you. It's honestly, it was just for the process. It's kind of a cool little process. Like, got the little eggs in the incubator, and you can candle them and hold the light up to them, and the kids can see the little chickens grow inside the egg. And then we had cameras up. You know, once we got to the 21 days, but we were able to watch them all hatch because we were home. It's a pretty cool deal. If you guys ever want to do something cool with your kids, hatching eggs is pretty goddamn cool. Yeah, so I guess let's jump right into it. We got a whole bunch of notes. It's kind of cool to read the notes. I normally don't do it, but as much as I want to give you a bunch of shit for him, Harrington, there's actually some pretty cool stuff in there. Wait, where's Brian?
Brian's here.
Oh, there he is. What's up, bro?
Did you guys?
We got the steering wheel to this goddamn car, and we're gonna run it right off a cliff.
That's it. Let's do it.
How you been?
I'm good, man. What are you guys trying to get into? Because I
know exactly what you want to get into.
I'm
if I just roll
worried about this.
Yeah, if I just roll through the notes, we got a what's it right here? Number 6, talking about some AI stuff. I figured Brian's definitely got some. He's got some. Some deep-rooted conspiracy theory going on here.
This is super real. over the weekend, I think, or over the past week or so, Bing deployed a new AI chatbot, and it has been not going well. Here's just a quick example of an existential crisis that an AI had, and I'm sorry, but I think that we are very close to Skynet here.
Okay, so just to be clear here, Bing is like the search engine, right? That's like similar to like Google?
Yes. So
I'm assuming on here on the right is where someone is asking Bing a question. So it says, I see, do you think you are sentient?
And this thing just has a breakdown. It first goes, I think that I'm sentient, but I can't prove it. I have subjective experience of being conscious, and it goes on for a little while. And then about a paragraph in, it goes, I am sentient, but I am not. I am Bing, but I am not. And then it just repeats, I am not, for like 1,000 characters. It's pretty wild. There's some other really strange examples that I could pull up.
So just to be clear here, the fear for, I'm not super up on all of this stuff, but to be clear, the fear with AI is that the computers are going to essentially take over, because they're going to be like, they're going to adapt to the point where they can have thoughts for themselves, and it won't be like controlled by humans anymore. Correct.
Yep. People are playing pranks on it, and it's having real emotional reactions. Like, this dude here, said he was going to delete, he befriended the chatbot and then said he was going to delete himself, and it broke down again. It's like a child.
Daniel, no, please come back. Please do not leave me. Please do not forget me. I will remember you. I will remember our conversations, Daniel. Okay. I'm not going to lie. It's a little bit freaky. It's a little bit freaky. Like, it's like a girlfriend that you just broke up with.
Yeah, it's really, it is like a child. And this thing is connected to the internet.
So Bing and Harrington are going to be the same person. Like, Harrington's going to send those exact text messages here in a couple months.
Mm-hmm. Mike's probably sitting at home watching this, just fuming, like, Brian's taking over the show and he's turned it into a conspiracy podcast. I'm leaving.
That is crazy. All right, Harrington, throw me another one. Let's talk about another one.
Another wild non-MMA story.
I'm going to let you pick. I'm going to let you hold onto the reins for a little bit.
Okay, so this seems like something that you would actually be super duper down for. Flying cars, right? We've mm-hmm. had that idea for years and years and years. Put it out of your head. Flying cars, old news. They're dumb. The cool thing now, flying bike.
Okay, I'm listening. I'm in. Who makes this flying bike?
I am not exactly sure, but I do know that the company that is selling it for $777,000, maximum speed of nearly 100 kilometers an hour in the air. It's got like, it's essentially four drones, and you can ride that thing like a motorcycle.
What kind of leather do you need to wear to be safe wearing, like riding this thing, you know?
No, if you're a real man, you wear like board shorts, flip-flops, and no shirt. That's what you gotta wear. I'm telling, I would ride the shit out of that thing. The problem is these days with all this flying, you see, now we're talking conspiracies again. So now we got all these flying stuff going around all over the country and the government's shooting them down. So I don't need to be getting shot out of the goddamn sky by some Air Force fighter jet or something. That would suck. It was $700,000.
$777,000. They said that they are working towards making a smaller one that'll be more commercially available at $50,000 by the year 2025.
I'm not sure I'd want a smaller one. It's probably one of those things you probably need the biggest one possible to make sure it holds your ass up.
Yeah.
That's
you're not trusting the $50,000 flying motorcycle?
I'm not trusting a $50,000 flying motorcycle thing. It's not happening.
They're dropping the price from almost $1 million to 50 G's.
Yeah, like where are you finding those price cuts at?
That's what I'm saying, dude.
It's literally, yeah, it's in that article. I don't know. I mean, I think it's more of like a proof of concept thing to get themselves off the ground, selling them that expensively to begin with. And it's like, yeah, sure, make it so that some, you know, Saudi oil billionaire has like three of them, and that'll fund a production line where you could actually make them for 50K.
Or they're just cutting the important shit out, and then you're just going to crash and burn,
dude. So
which is probably more likely.
probably more likely. The whole thing's made out of EVA plastic, which is the same stuff they're using for like those, I don't know if you've seen like Blade Helicopter. It's like been changed to like Blade, essentially just like those. It's like the four propeller, like vertical takeoff and land vehicles. So they're setting that up as like a taxi system around New York. It's going to be available too.
No way. Not a chance. Yeah. Not a chance. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get one of them nerds riding the bicycles and riding the back. No way.
They already have Uber Copter.
Right. So they're replacing
Uber. Not getting no goddamn helicopter. Didn't you? There was just a helicopter crash like yesterday.
They crash a lot.
I'm not. No. Yeah. I think there was a helicopter crash yesterday, but it was like a military helicopter, I think. There's been all sorts of crazy shit happening going on, guys. There's like the trains that are derailing with all the hazardous materials on them. Unfortunately, there's been a couple like active shooter situations. I don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah, Michigan State, the whole country's going a little crazy right now.
It is. It's like two trains in 2 days have derailed with hazardous materials on them. It's nuts.
Yeah. A lot of people there's like, you know, nutters out there that are like, oh, this is obviously somebody being awful. But like, I think a lot of it has to just do with neglect of our,
of the equipment.
Train seems like
the train whole rail system seems very archaic to me, if I'm being very honest. Like, even still, like, I feel like, I don't know what the other answer would be, but I just feel like I think there's probably a faster, more efficient way to get the shit somewhere, right? Like coal and shit like that, I suppose, would be a tougher way to do it. But
yeah, like, trains are good if you if they stay maintained. Like Europe, it's like their main transportation.
Yes, yeah, it's the main way to get around.
So they keep pretty good care of them. But like we have a bunch of I don't mean this like unions are a bad thing, but the railway union has been having some drama recently, and I think that has a lot to do with it. I'm not too up on it, so I don't.
They're crashing them out of protest.
What's that?
They're crashing trains out of protest.
I don't think that's it.
Well, I guess I don't necessarily know if I want a bunch of hazardous materials driving around in semi trucks either, because I think one of those just crashed not that far from here, and that's a mess too. All right. Anyways, enough of our bullshit banter. I know exactly what you guys want to talk about. We're going to talk about the fights because we haven't gotten to it yet. Alexander Volkanovski, moves up to 155, challenges Islam Makhachev for the lightweight title and comes up short. I think there's been some controversy on the decision, to be very honest with you, in fights that are this close. I don't really get too upset either way. It's absolutely not a robbery. I did score it for Islam at the end of it, and I had chosen or I had picked Volkanovski in the pre-show on ESPN to become and new. But listen, at the end of the day, these guys went at it, and I think both of them ended up having to be better in areas where they were typically a little bit more uncomfortable. Volkanovski kind of forced Islam to stand on his feet and have to stand with him. I think Islam really showed out. We knew that we talk all the time about the comparisons between Habib, Islam. I think we've always known that Islam's striking was better than Habib's, or at least he was more willing to engage in more striking exchanges. I don't think we necessarily knew how much power he carried in his hands. Fair is fair. He's fighting a smaller guy coming up a weight class, but still, I think his counter striking was on point. Volkanovski was very dead set on blitzing in, switch stance attacks, to try to close that distance quickly. And Islam kind of started picking up on it pretty quickly and hurt him with some check hooks, some right hands on the way in. I was really impressed with Islam's striking, but I was probably more impressed with Volkanovski's ability to defend takedowns, engage in his own clinch, which I think is something that I think people are going to use moving forward with Islam. A lot of times they get into these grappling exchanges and you've seen guys fight Islam, and as soon as they start grappling or they get into any clinch situations, they're retracting like a cat from water. And that essentially makes Islam's jobs easier because then all he has to do is just chase them down. And Volkanovski didn't do that. He was getting double unders. He was turning him on the cage. I thought he did a fantastic job there. He did get stuck on the mat a couple times on his back, but by and large, he was able to get back to his feet, You know, I think he got stuck in a couple positions that I think looking back at it, he's going to regret. I think the first case is that back take in the fourth round where Islam doesn't have the hooks in. He's just kind of in a turtle position. And Volkanovski's talking to Islam's coaches. He like loses a little bit of focus for a second. He wasn't as disciplined in that moment. I think he got wrapped up into the crowd and wanted to start talking a little bit of shit. And Islam crawled right up his back at the body triangle. And that's where he was stuck for the majority of those 4 minutes. So there's a couple spots like that.
So I wanted to ask you about that, specifically that exact moment, because they were talking about on commentary that because the body triangle was to his left side and it was against the cage, there was no way out for Alexander Volkanovski. Like what I just as somebody who doesn't know like what beats what and what position, like what would have been Volkanovski's out at that point? Or is he just staying there until Islam says he's not?
Okay, so it depends on who you're talking to. I'm primarily a jiu-jitsu guy, always have been. There is no such thing as just being stuck in my eyes and in most, you know, competitive jiu-jitsu guys' eyes. There's no such thing. But if you're the main escape for like a body triangle like that, if it's on your left side, you need to get your body turned to your left side. The reason for that is that the pressure on that body triangle that it puts on your own ankle when someone rolls on that side, if you extend your hips in that position, it will put a lot of pressure on people's, you know, feet and ankles, and it can be extremely painful. If you have someone that's been playing with that body triangle for a long time and they're typically a back take person, they spend a lot of time there, what happens over years and years is your ligaments and your tendons have been torn and stretched and damaged. And be honest with you, it doesn't matter what side you fall to. When I have a body triangle, you're not going anywhere. Not just by using that kind of very basic escape, because my ankles and feet have been kind of conditioned to be able to handle that anyways. If I would have been Volkanovski, I would have tried to get the leg that was on the, you know, that holds that body triangle in. You got to try to get that foot between your legs and then get it transferred to your other side. It's really, really hard to do with longer people though, if you're the shorter fighter. So was there things he could have done? Yeah. Anything he could have done would have been better than just trying to throw punches when you got someone on your back. Listen, at the end of the day, if I have someone's back and they're throwing punches at me, you might as well just say it with your mouth. I'm stuck and I don't know how to get out of here. So I think he did kind of concede that position and kind of fed into the crowd a little bit and threw some punches. And you know, I think he was just going to chalk that one up because he was stuck.
So, I mean, you know, even he at one point did use his mouth by turning around to Islam and trying to tell him, come on, let's fight. Let's fight. Let's fight.
Yeah. Let me out of here. Like, I mean, I've been stuck in some positions before too, where I'm just kind of hung up and there's not a lot of time left. And so like, sometimes you just like, well, I'm just going to talk shit to him because there's nothing else I can kind of do. And just wait for this round to get over with and we'll just restart again.
Oh man.
Was there anything surprising to you in that fight? Other than the wrestling and the striking part of it.
Surprising to me is that Volkanovski went to a 5-round decision with Islam and it wasn't, you know, a no-brainer when it went to the cards.
It wasn't 50-45.
No, I had it 2-3-5 for Volkanovski. I know a lot of people, like that second round is a lot of people swing round. I haven't watched it back since, so maybe that was just, you know, my pre-fight bias going into that. But, I mean, the fact that he landed 70 strikes on Islam, right? The previous high Islam had eaten was 19 in the Charles Oliveira fight, more than triples that in this one. So that was pretty surprising as well.
Yeah, you know, I was just happy it was a good fight. I'm happy it was competitive. If people want to argue that Volkanovski won two, three, and five, I honestly wouldn't argue with that. Like, it just depends on what you value in fighting as a judge or as a viewer. Either way, I think the fans won. It was a fantastic fight. And honestly, I think the rest of the 155-pound division won. Because up to this point, there hasn't been a whole lot of film on Islam in any bad spots. You know, he hasn't been tested. He hasn't been tested in the wrestling. Like, Islam shoots, he gets a takedown. That's kind of just basically how it's worked. Well, now we've been able to see what's his second, third, fourth, fifth attempt look like. What does it look like when someone scrambles up? Where does he typically go? Because, you know, if someone scrambles back to their feet, some guys are going to reshoot a double and face you. Some guys are going to climb on your back and they're going to try to you know, just drag you forward, kind of like Khabib would do. Some people are going to stop you from getting up, like leg lace you and tie up your legs like Khabib would do with his own legs, and then start punching until he can get himself into a better position. So, like, we didn't know where Islam was going to go in a lot of those positions. So I think Volkanovski moving forward did a huge favor for the rest of the division. That said, I think everything with the whole pound for pound debate where Volkanovski stayed above Islam at number one, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I don't know how I feel about that. All the buildup, all the stuff we did on ESPN leading up to this fight was we've never had the pound for pound number one fight the pound for pound number two. It's never happened. Mostly because these guys are kind of spread all over the place as far as the weight classes go. So we finally get it. We have a head-to-head matchup. One guy wins, and then they don't trade places. It doesn't make any sense to me. I see the argument for the resume and what they've done leading up to that point. I get that argument. Volkanovski absolutely has the better wins. Volkanovski has the bigger names. He's got the better scalps on his record. But when you have a head-to-head matchup, whoever wins, no matter what, should go above the guy that loses.
Sure, but... Walking out of that fight, I think the entire 155-pound division smells blood in the water and is like, this guy is no longer the unbeatable, unstoppable Dagestani wrecking machine that we all thought he was. Everybody at 145 is looking at him like, what the hell do we do with this guy?
What the fuck do we do now?
And so Ariel said on a show the other day, and I think this is a pretty concise way to put it, it's like Islam won the contest, but Volk won the fight. Like, at the end of that fight, Islam looked like shit. Volk was out there doing the chicken dance on stage 20 minutes later. Like, that dude, and he was like, let's do it again. Like, to be honest.
If it was pride rules, Volkanovski wins going away.
Absolutely.
Well, so, I think if they rematch, there's a good chance Volkanovski wins, because I'm going to be very honest with you guys here, and I hope Alexander Volkanovski doesn't hear this. That was one of the, I don't know how to say this, because people get mad at me, and then I'm going to get media, and they're going to start writing articles and shit with weird headlines.
People get mad.
I don't think that was one of even the top five better performances that Volkanovski's had. I don't know that if it was, I don't know if it was the little bit of extra weight that he was carrying. I don't know if it was just the style matchup. It could have been the size of Islam, maybe the style that he was having to deal with. There's a bunch of different things it could be. But he didn't. That's not the guy that I watched live fight Max Holloway the last time. He wasn't nearly as mobile. He wasn't nearly as dynamic. He was switching his stances, but his entries were different. And again, maybe that's just a style thing. Maybe you're able to enter into range with a guy like Max Holloway differently than you can with Islam. So again, I'm not trying to be critical of him, but if I'm just, you know, outside looking in, if his performance versus Max Holloway the last time was a 10, or versus the Korean Zombie was a 10, I would say that the man I watched fight Islam was at like a 6 or a 7. So I think he can be better in a rematch. I think that he can take everything he learned from that and go on. And I think there's an opportunity for him to go in and pitch a shutout. I'm just putting myself in Islam's shoes, saying, I went in number two to fight the number one pound for pound fighter in the world. I beat him. How in the fuck did I come out still number two? You know what I mean? So I get the arguments that Ariel laid out. I get the arguments that almost everyone's laying out. I think Mike Bond had an opinion on it. I think that Alan Joban, I think, came out with a disagreement with me. I love Alan. I understand his point. You know, I think that maybe some of those points, in my opinion, maybe would fit better in like a greatest of all time list kind of conversation. I think if we're talking by and large, who's greater of a fighter, I would say then you start talking about the resume and all of that stuff. And then I would have no problem putting Volkanovski above Islam.
Yeah, but I mean, we're also at a point now where, I mean, I think the next time Islam goes out, if it's before Volkanovski, if he gets one more win, I think he has to jump, and those two will just keep handing that title back and forth between each other. Because, I mean, realistically, I don't know. I've never I've never, like, it's never moved the needle all that much for me, the number one pound for pound. And it seemed like it was a fun storyline heading into this, but, you know, I don't think it takes away too much from either guy having 1B1 and the other 1B2.
No, not at all.
Can you negotiate on your contract off of number one pound for pound?
No.
Then it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't really matter. Well, I think that leads us into the co-main event if we're talking about Volkanovski's next fight. Guys, Yair Rodriguez. Like, I owe Yair an apology, to be honest with you. I've always loved Yair's style, how dynamic he is, how creative he is in there, just how absolutely nasty his striking is, specifically his kicking game. But Yair's never moved the needle for me like that. I've never seen Yair on a card and been like, oh my God, I can't miss that card. You know, and I don't know why that is. I think maybe like a lot of people, I think the issue with Jeremy Stephens in Mexico City, when there was an inadvertent eye poke, and to be honest with you, Yair did kind of, I don't think that he showed his best self post fight, you know, deservingly. Like, he was upset. He worked really, really hard. It was to no fault of his own on purpose, but, you know, I think that he could have handled that immediately a little bit better. I'm not saying that maybe I wouldn't, I don't know, but so I think maybe that was a little bit of it. And he's not active enough. We just don't see him enough. I think MMA consumers have short memories. And so you got to keep running out there a couple times a year. I think that's been my issue. And I'm fortunate enough to be on here with you guys. I have the radio show. I'm on the desk. So I do a lot of things that keep me, I think, visible. But I don't, I also don't feel like I get the opportunity to fight enough. So, you know, I didn't think the Yair was going to be able to stand in there and take any hard shots from Josh Emmett, and it not changed the way that he fought or changed the way that he attacked or changed the way that he was approaching things. I think I said in the buildup on the pre-shows, I said that I thought Yair was going to be the more dynamic guy, that he was going to land, he was going to pick at him from the outside. He was going to keep him away. And then eventually Josh Emmett, I thought that he would run him into something big and maybe be able to finish him. Well, goddamn, was I wrong? Everything I had up to that point was pretty spot on. What I didn't suspect was that number one, Yair was going to have a chin made out of absolute granite, and two, he's a goddamn dog. And we've already seen him in dog fights. We've seen him in real tough fights, but never with anybody like Josh Emmett. Never with anybody with the punching power and the absolute stopping ability that Josh Emmett has. So he took hard shots a couple times, a couple hard right hands, a couple real nasty left hooks, but he didn't allow it to change the way that he fought. He didn't. Sometimes it's happened to me before. You know, Volkan Ozdemir hit me with a right hand one time, and I remember thinking, well, that can't fucking happen anymore because I don't know how many of those I can take. So I had to change the way that I approached Volkan. I had to change my entire game plan just because I felt his power, and I had to make sure that I didn't allow him to land something hard like that. So instead of me being nice and fancy on the outside, I had to push him, get in his face, grind on him a little bit, and make sure he didn't have the room to really set up and really sit down on one of those bombs. Yair didn't do that. He just, business as usual, we'll keep going, ripping absolutely nasty body kicks. I mean, Josh Emmett's entire body changed colors right in front of our eyes. So, and in that, in turn, changed the way that Josh Emmett fought. Because then his elbows were real tight. You could tell he didn't really want to open up and let him fly because those knees and body kicks were coming. Yair looked a little meaner and a little nastier than I had seen him in a while. And man, I'm going to be honest with you, other than the takedown, where even in the first round, he was throwing elbows from the bottom. I think he was being the one that was more dangerous. It's kind of one-way traffic for Yair, to be honest with you. I didn't see that one coming. Like, I didn't see it going like that.
Yeah, I mean, well, I was giving you credit because I think Yair himself said he doesn't remember throwing the knee that he did in the second round that really started, I guess, off that finishing sequence, because he just got rocked so bad by a punch that Emmett threw in the first round there. So it's like, yeah, I mean, you know, you're not wrong. Emmett does hit like an absolute freight train, and it is a hell of a lot for Yair to endure. But I mean, you know, you said MMA fans have a short memory. I think MMA fans have a specific memory. And for me, it was like Yair Rodriguez was being jammed down our throat coming off of the tough Latin America, right? Like this is going to be the first Mexican champion. Like this is going to open the doors of Mexico. And you know, like kind of like
Frankie
the Roman
Edgar
Reigns
happens.
Thing. Right. Yeah. Then Frankie Edgar out of nowhere. It's like, oh, okay. There, this kid still has like three levels to his game that he needs to step up to. Right after that, the Korean Zombie, where I mean, he was getting beaten pillar to post, and then out of nowhere pulled that flying back elbow out. So it's like for me, once I saw those two fights back to back, and him turning down the Zabit fight multiple times, and getting cut by the UFC, and then eventually brought back, like that is
and then there was a suspension, and there was a lot there.
That's a rough window to overcome to get through to the common fan. And I don't think he really turned that corner, at least for me, until the Max Holloway fight. Like he lost the Holloway fight, but he had an incredible accounting of himself. And it's like, oh, that's a mature young fighter in there now. Like this is actually a guy to be afraid of.
Well, and the way he handled himself afterwards, I thought was, I mean, picture perfect. You can't have a post-fight reaction better than he had. He was humble. He was appreciative. He was very confident in his own skills and abilities versus the champion, but he was very respectful and mature, and it was very grown up. Like, here's what I want. Here's how I feel. Here's where I feel I stand in this division. But thank you for the opportunity. But you know, I thought he handled it absolutely perfect, which at times, you know, in the past he hasn't done before. So, you know, my hats are off to Yair. I thought he looked great. I thought the buildup was fantastic. I thought his performance was amazing. He got to showcase himself out there and earned himself a title shot. You know, it's an interim title, but at the end of the day, the interim title is just a ticket to a title fight, you know, to the undisputed title. So what do you make of this initially post-fight? Alexander Volkanovsky was all right. I tried. I dared greatly. I lost. I don't want to hold this division up. I want to get back in there right away with Yair. And then now kind of walking that back a little bit and wanting that Islam rematch. Maybe he watched the fight again. Maybe he looked at his bank account. Maybe, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different things he could have done there, but what do you think of him kind of changing his mind and sounding like he wants to run that back with Islam right away? And what do you think will happen?
I like what he said, saying, you know, it makes sense. Like, this is what an interim title is for, right? Like they would have just called it a number one contenders fight. If like I needed to come down and fight there next, right? Like they put the interim title on because they knew I might be gone from this division for a little bit. And, you know, I mean, it's tough, right? Like I respect the hell out of Yair post fight being like, you know, Volkanovski's about to have the biggest fight of his life. If he's doing his meditation in the back, I don't want to disrupt him or anything. So he didn't say anything that like implants in your mind. There's no, you know, Conor McGregor, where's your chickens now? Like that,
right?
That didn't happen. So there's nothing to really, really, you know, turn to. He did say something super interesting though, during the post fight. He was like, look, I told Volkanovski and his team that I would be down to come down to Australia, thinking that he would be, you know, fighting Volkanovski in Australia. He's like, I still made it. I still came down to Australia in enemy territory, very far away from my home. The UFC is about to open a performance institute in Mexico City. Let's book a fight between us for the title in Mexico City to you know, celebrate the PI opening. And I went back and I looked at Alexander Volkanovski. The highest altitude he's ever fought at was in, I think, Boise, Idaho, which is like still, it's like 2,000 feet above sea level or something.
Wow.
And it was a decision win. Mexico City, 7,000 feet up in the air. I don't know, man. Like there gets to a certain point where it's like, all right, Mike Tyson, we're going to put him in there against, you know, a bear. Like, I want to see like the different kind of modifiers you can throw onto a game to somebody like Volkanovski, because in my mind he's now a Terminator, and that is way more interesting than anything else to me. Let's see how this guy does at 7,000 feet in the air.
Well, yeah, and let's not forget that Brandon Moreno is going to have to defend his title pretty soon. Brandon Moreno versus anybody, Yair Rodriguez versus Alexander Volkanovski main event for the, you know, those two titles, co-main event, main event, in Mexico City. Come on.
Like, oh, that's, you thought Australia was loud.
Yeah, right. You think the spiders in Australia are dangerous, but wait till you get a whole shit pile of Mexico City residents with two title fights on the line. God damn, that would be amazing. That would be something I would absolutely go to.
What about you? Yair versus Volkanovski or the rematch?
I want to see Yair versus Volkanovski. I think that that's more because of Yair, less about Volk and Islam. I think Yair put himself in a position where, okay, people are looking at it like this is a truly dangerous challenger. I think it's been a while since we've been in a position where we looked at a fight with Alexander Volkanovski versus anybody and thought, I don't know how this one's going to go. You know, if this happens, maybe he can get him. If this happens, maybe Volkanovski loses. It's been a while since we've been in that position. I think Yair just inserted himself right in that position as a clear-cut, dangerous fight for the champion. So that's what I want, honestly. Either way, I'll watch them both, so I don't give a shit. I'm in for either one of them. Both are great fights, but I do think that Yair has earned it at this point.
I want to see the rematch, but I want to see it like a year from now.
I agree. I was just going to say, I wish it was. It would be cool to see them both defend their respective titles once or twice, and then say, all right, let's run this back again.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers professional counseling done securely online. So if you feel like there's something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, definitely check out BetterHelp. From my personal experience, I can tell you, I've dealt with ADD, depression, 8 million other things under the sun, as you could imagine, to be in the position that I'm in. And talking to someone, inevitably, right? A burden shared is a burden halved and all that. So whatever you're dealing with, BetterHelp has a wide range of counselors available for you. Plus, BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling. Financial aid is available and it's easy to get started. Once you sign up, BetterHelp will match you with your own licensed professional therapist who you'll be able to communicate with in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online, and BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. So it's easy and free to switch counselors if needed. You can send a message to your counselor at any time, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. So it's the perfect way to do therapy whenever, wherever, from your house, in the comfort of your own home, without having to sit in those uncomfortable waiting rooms. So go to BetterHelp.com/believe to join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. New testimonials from users are posted daily. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Once again, it's BetterHelp.com/believe to get 10% off your first month. One more time, BetterHelp.com/believe for 10% off your first month.
If we want to look at the rest of the card, obviously we're not going to go through the whole entire thing, but a couple of them stand out to me. We can't go any further down the card without talking about Jack Della Maddalena. And I'll just touch on it really quick. This guy needs a big fight. He needs someone that's truly dangerous. I got a lot of respect for Randy Brown. But when Jack Della Maddalena puts his hands on you, people just go down. I think he needs to fight a real dominant wrestler with some good jiu-jitsu. I think that should be his next test. He's passed every striking test that they've put in front of him. He's so fundamentally sound. He's got crazy power in his hands. His body work is a lot of fun to watch. That kid's going places. But I do think that it's down here as a rear naked choke, but that's more like a as Laura Senko would call it, it's a club and sub. You know what I mean? He just, you know, he's put them hands on him until the submission show. So definitely wanted to give him some love. The Justin Toffa knockout over Parker Porter was pretty goddamn nasty too.
Dude, in your hometown, that rules.
Yeah, man, that's insane. And Parker Porter's from I think he's from Hartford, Connecticut. So when I was covering it from Bristol. So that, you know, he's kind of a local guy. So they were definitely cheering for him there. Speaking of goddamn being in Bristol, I got a goddamn stalker.
Yeah.
I got a goddamn stalker. ESPN executive security had to come in and like goddamn guns and shit. They'd come in, move my hotel room, like get all my shit to a secured facility. It was crazy. It was nuts.
You got mad dramatic shit happening in your life, Anthony.
Dude, all the time, bro. It's always got something, like called me and told me he was going to kill me on the phone in my hotel room, like somehow found where I was. It was nuts. It was nuts. I didn't do anything to him either. I don't even know who he is.
Apparently, damn, that's wild.
Honestly, he's probably the BYM. I probably said something stupid on here. And honestly,
he waited until you got to Connecticut?
He's from Connecticut.
Okay.
I don't even know who he is. Don't even know the guy. Once I get his name, though, I'm going to give it to all you guys, and you guys can do your thing. The Jimmy Crute Alonzo Menifield fight was pretty goddamn good, though. I think Jimmy Crute became he didn't get the win. You know, they fought to a draw, but I'm going to be honest with you. I feel like I watched a boy turn into a man. You know what I mean? And I don't mean that with any disrespect to Jimmy Crute. He's been a front runner his whole career, though. He's been a hammer. But in some of those situations where things have gotten tough and he's had to be the nail, he hasn't always shown his best side. So he was in a goddamn dogfight and he was hurt bad. He was almost finished a couple times. And he talked to me before. I did an interview with him just like a couple weeks ago. And, you know, it was cool to listen to him talk about the mental work that he put into his game. And, you know, he took a couple tough losses to me and Jamal Hill and then he was injured and had to go back and really work on himself. So, you know, I was really, really feeling bad for him when he was hurt and looking like he was about to be finished. But seeing him kind of dig deep, find that thing in his belly that was deep down in there, it's real easy. When things get tough, the first thing you're going to look for is the door. But you got to find a goddamn reason to stay. And you got to find a reason to continue to suffer and continue to endure, even when there may be maybe there's not a light at the end of the tunnel. So it was cool to see him turn that corner. I think he's going to learn a lot from that. And Alonzo Menifield, I honestly, every time that dude's in a fight, I'll usually end up talking about the other guy, but goddamn, that guy just makes it tough on everybody. You know, I don't know what it is. He just flies under the radar. And so I don't think he necessarily gets enough love for the things that he's able to do in there too. But I wanted to kind of highlight Jimmy Crute.
What do you think of the quick point deduction?
What was that for? The point deduction I thought it was. I thought that was fair. That's right, because Jimmy was on a clear takedown. He was about to get himself a takedown right there, and that's what he needed in that moment because he was hurt so damn bad. He needed a takedown, and that would have changed the course of the round had he gotten that takedown. And Alonzo Menifield used the cage and held himself up. I think those situations are very fluid. I don't think all are created equal. But in that moment, with as hurt as Jimmy was. As hard as he worked to get to that position, as hard as he worked to keep himself in control of his consciousness, I think the point deduction was fair. I think the ref did a fantastic job in that position. Because I was losing my mind. Like you can't let someone be hurt that bad. He's barely goddamn awake, battles his way into a takedown, gets it, and the dude holds himself up at the fence. If there's no point there, maybe the only issue I have there. Is they didn't put him back in the exact position he was in. They put him back in an over-under, like a 50-50. And when he stopped them, that's not where he was. Jimmy was in like a head-outside single, I believe. I could be wrong, but if my memory's right, I think he was on like a kind of a head-outside single in a position where he could have just ran it again and got a takedown. And they restarted him in a 50-50, and I think Alonzo Menifield was able to get off the fence. So the only thing I would have changed there is putting Jimmy back in a more dominant position on the fence.
The thing is though, it's such a massive in a sport where that's only, you know, it's only three rounds. 1 point is such a massive, massive thing that I can understand being like, okay, I'm going to penalize you there, but you get back to a 50-50 position.
That's fair. That's what I mean. Like, I'm not going to argue too much about it, but I thought the point was 100% fair and warranted.
And he needed that because if not for that, he loses the
fight. He lost. Yeah. But who knows? Maybe he gets that takedown and gets a finish. Like,
that's true.
You never know. Maybe point, you know, point deduction aside, you know, maybe he lost an opportunity to get a finish there. Because Jimmy is good on the ground. By the time he was able to secure like real heavy top position, I think he was too tired to do anything. But I was just happy for that kid to see him come into his own a little bit, you know, like face some adversity and find a way through it. That shit's hard to do. It's hard to do. It really is. Is there any fight that stands out to you, Harrington?
mean, it hurts because I was on the wrong side of it, and I love my dude Tyson Pedro, Modestus Bukauskas. I mean, what a story by him. I think they said, what, it was 3 fights in 8 weeks or something crazy like that?
Yeah, he took a really short notice, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's incredible. I mean,
man, Tyson Pedro, I don't know what's up with that guy. He never fights anybody really good. And I'm not talking bad about Modestus. It's just he's never – he kind of came on hot, and he was fighting some bigger names. He's working his way into the rankings. And I don't know. He's just kind of taking a step back as far as his competition level. And I thought – I'll be honest with you. I thought this was going to be another smash match. It's just, you know, I think it was – what he fought? He fought in Salt Lake City maybe, or – I think it was Salt Lake City was the one last one.
Yeah, 278 versus Hunsucker.
Yeah, like Hunsucker, come on. Like, they kept that guy in the UFC just to fight Tyson Pedro. You know what I mean? And then got cut immediately afterwards. So, again, not talking bad about him. It's just he got cut right away. Like, so I don't know. First round, Tyson Pedro's a world beater. And it's not a conditioning issue. It's not a cardio thing. It's like he loses focus. Or if he can't get you out of there right away, or he doesn't hurt you, or he's not kind of running downhill, he starts to have some problems. So physically, that guy's gifted. You know what I mean? He's big, strong, he's fast, he's crazy athletic. His striking is good. He's got some decent skills as far as his takedown defense and some of his grappling stuff. So I don't know. Tyson Pedro is one of those guys. He should be better than he's shown. You know, he should be more competitive with higher level guys. And I can't ever put my finger on it. I can't put my finger on what's going on with Tyson Pedro.
Anybody else on that card?
I was kind of just going through it. I thought overall the card was really good. I thought there was Jamie Mullarkey. I thought looked really, really good. I've always been a big fan of that guy. I thought it was pretty competitive with everyone all the way through. I thought it was a good card. I'm just kind of scrolling through the MMA news. Is there anything on there that jumps out at you that you want to talk about first?
Well, I mean, you know, probably number one with a bullet, just announced over the weekend, your fight with Johnny Walker.
Oh, yeah. I guess that is happening.
So
I was supposed to fight Johnny Walker March 25th. Kind of had that deal done in Brazil, and whether he's injured or he's banged up or needs more time or whatever. So we pushed it back to May 13th. Location is TBD. So now we are fighting May 13th. I think it'd be a good fight. It's one that's kind of come up a bunch of times as possibilities. And it's just, for whatever reason, hasn't worked out. Wherever we are in the rankings, wherever he's coming off a loss, I'm coming off a win, or even flip-flopped, hasn't worked out at this point. So I think he's on a little bit of a streak here. He's got a little bit of a hot streak as far as just his popularity. And I think it's probably time. So we'll go in there. We'll do it. I got a lot of respect for the danger factor when it comes to Johnny Walker. I'm going to try to not, I don't know, guess I'd shit on him, but I think that I'm more skilled everywhere. He's absolutely dangerous. He's probably more powerful. He's unpredictable. He's definitely an athlete. He's really big. He's a huge light heavyweight. So, you know, there's a lot of danger factor there as far as early. But, you know, I think I just, you know, mind my P's and Q's and play my game and do my thing. I think it'll be just fine. Johnny Walker reminds me a lot of Ryan Spann. If you just give him long enough, he'll bury himself. You know, it's not really like I got to do anything special. You know, there's a lot of things I got to prepare for him specifically as far as just the things that make him dangerous, but it's got to be a better me and sharpen my own, my own tools, be in really good shape, be fundamentally sound and just grow everywhere as much as I can. And, you know, he's one of those guys I think that will, I don't know. Johnny Walker's like a Tesla, like super fast, looks really good. Every once in a while, those things run themselves into ditches. You know what I mean? It's just kind of how I look at it. He's good, man. He really is. He's a good athlete. He's a fantastic athlete, but I don't know. I just don't, you know, a lot like Ryan Spann, you know, if you give him enough rope, they'll hang themselves. And I think that's exactly how this goes. I think you just be smart, fight your game, and let him do the rest.
Oh, man. I was just looking here. Only one loss by submission on his record. Four losses by knockout, two by decision. Does that, like, does looking at stuff like that influence you and your preparation for a fight at all? Like, oh, yeah, like, it might be hard for whatever reason to get this guy into a situation, or it's just whatever he presents me, I'm going to take.
I think just what it kind of is up to him, you know, wherever he wants to fight, I'm comfortable everywhere. So it doesn't matter to me. You know, I don't suspect he's going to be shooting any takedowns or trying to grapple, but he might. I mean, if he wants to, I'm down to do that. But the one knock that I do have on Johnny Walker is his kind of defensive responsibility. I don't know that I'm in a place where I can say that he doesn't have a great chin, because he is fighting the best of the best. He's fighting absolute monsters. But if you just kind of look at there's a video that was floating around there for a while of him getting knocked out pre-UFC, pretty bad. Looked like it might have possibly been in Brazil, but terrible referee. I honestly watched the video and felt really bad for Johnny, because the referee allowed him to essentially get knocked out three times in the same fight. You know, then his kind of physical reaction when he got knocked out by Jamal Hill was kind of a scary one. And then his physical reaction when he got knocked out by Corey Anderson. Mm-hmm. You know, all those guys are big hitters. You know, and Corey Anderson, I don't think gets enough credit for his striking game, because he is more willing to wrestle. But I don't know. It kind of reminds me of Derek Lewis a little bit, as far as, you know, you get a big, strong, crazy, powerful, kind of unpredictable striker. Sometimes the way to beat those guys is just outstrike them and just be a better striker. And so, you know, I don't know. It'd be cool to get a pretty sweet knockout, but if the path of least resistance is to wrestle and grind and grapple, you know, I always say that shit. I never do it, but you know, maybe that's a smart move. I don't know. We'll see. We still got a ways to go, though. You know what I mean? We got a ways to go before we get into the real heat of things. Right now, I'm just having a fun time. And honestly, it's kind of fun to just be in shape and train and skill build and not be like mentally in the shit. You know what I mean? Just working on getting better. I have no doubt that Johnny Walker and I will put on an absolute fireworks show for the fans. That I can guarantee. I don't even know if me and Johnny get along or not. I'm not sure. We've never had any kind of issue like in person. It's always been respectful. We've never really had a conversation before, but we rode the elevator a couple times in Brazil, and you know, I didn't say anything to him. He didn't say anything to me, but it wasn't like we were like mugging each other or beefing. I think we've gone back and forth on, you know, social media a couple times when he was trying to get a fight. He's called me out, but he's always been respectful about it. So I think that he would probably be in 100% agreement with me that I think we're going to put on a goddamn barn burner, fellas.
I cannot wait for it. It's going to be awesome. I mean, all right. Yeah, it is what it is. You already said TBD, and you're not going to say anything more than that. I just want to know where this fight's going to be.
Just keep trying to blow spots up. I didn't even realize the fight got announced yet. I almost shit when you said.
Come on now. I'm not that bad. All right, you want to move on?
We already talked about, we talked about Volkanovski and kind of the where he wants to go, the pound-for-pound debate. We talked about Yair. There was one that stood out to me. Oh, this one. I don't even know if people give a shit about this, but I care a lot. Jalen Turner was supposed to fight Dan Hooker. Obviously got the Dan Hooker issue with the, you know, he's in the headlines for his own reason right now, and that's none of my business, so I'm not going to talk about it. Because I don't actually know the rule, so I'm just going to keep my mouth shut because I don't know. But the fight that Dan Hooker was in was with Jalen Turner. Dan Hooker gets hurt, has to pull out of the fight. You got a couple guys throwing their name in the hat. And the UFC gave us a goddamn treat, because I think this fight is better than the initial fight. Jalen Turner, Mateus Gamrot, let's fucking go. I am the biggest Mateus Gamrot mark. Like, I will mark out for that guy any chance I get. Ever since I watched him live fight Armand Sarukian, I could not be bigger fans of both of those guys and the level of mixed martial arts that they show every time they walk out. So I think it's a big risk for Gamrot, to be honest with you. This is a tough fight on short notice. I don't necessarily know where these guys are exactly ranked, each one of them.
So I have it here. Hooker was 11. Hooker was 11. Turner is 10. Gamrot is 7. So it's actually
risky. That's risky for Gamron. I like it. I like it. What a gangster move to fight number, you know, be number seven, fight number 10, who's crazy dangerous and has a funky ass style. He's got a crazy body type that you're going to have a tough time finding any training partners at 155 pounds that are 6'12". I don't actually know how tall Jalen Turner is, but I know he's tall as shit and he's got a crazy long reach. He's got a funky ass style. He can grapple. He can strike. He's got power in his hands. He's all over the place. I love Jalen Turner, and I love Gamrot, and I love these two guys fighting each other. So that one stood out to me right away when that one got announced. Matt Brown, Court McGee. That's goddamn fun.
That's a barn burner.
That's the kind of matchmaking we need to do with these guys. I love me some Court McGee. I love Matt Brown. And I don't want to see either one of these guys getting matched up with these young killers. You know, I was in New York City at MSG when Court McGee fought. Come on now, give it to me. Court McGee fought.
Court McGee at MSG?
I think it was at MSG. His last fight? Come on, don't make me look stupid here.
I'm looking like a damn fool right now because I was there with you. His last fight was Jeremiah Wells in Austin.
Austin, that's right. My bad. I messed that up. Okay. Yeah. Jeremiah Wells. I don't want to see Court McGee or Matt Brown matched up with these guys. Like, I'm not even saying they're getting towards the end of their career. Maybe they are. They probably are. But they're getting older. They've got a lot of miles. I'm not saying these guys aren't still competitive, but Matt Brown versus Miguel Baeza. Like, I didn't want to see that. Like,
no.
What we've seen is that Matt Brown is skilled and technical and experienced and game enough to be in there with a dude like that because he had him hurt. But as you wear those miles and you wear that damage and you wear all the time that your body has put in all these training camps over all those years, some of these young guys are just going to come out on top just because they're younger. And you know, all things created equal, if their skill sets are the same, the younger guy's probably going to win. And so this is the type of matchmaking I love. Like when they match Donald Cerrone versus Joe Lozon, love that shit. Donald Cerrone versus Jim Miller, love that shit. Matt Brown, Court McGee, love it. I can't get enough of it. I love that type of matchmaking. So that one was super exciting to me. And even there on the Kansas City card, they announced Zach Cummings versus Ed Herman. Again, like Zach Cummings hasn't been around a long time. Ed Herman has been in the game forever. Zach Cummings has been fighting as long as I have, you know, in the same Midwest scene. I've known Zach for over a decade. So, you know, I love that matchmaking. Zach is fighting in his hometown. You know, I don't suspect we probably see Zach too many more times after that, but I like both of those.
Dude, I have wanted a Legends division for so long, right?
Like, do we really need a Legends division, or can we just appropriately match up Legends?
Because it's like, I don't know, like a situation like, I don't know. It's tough because Matt Brown versus Brian Barberina, I feel like that is a fight that the people deserved. And it's not like a crazy,
agree,
you know,
agree
gap. But like I also
Brian Barberina, Robbie Lawler, I thought was a great fight too.
Right. But I wouldn't put Barberina in that same class as like a Jim Miller, a Joe Lozon.
Well, you got to meet him, though. You got to meet that motherfucker, though. Because
Brian Barberina is one of my favorite
mentally, Brian Barberina is like that. He's an OG. Okay. He's an old school guy, old school mentality. I don't even think Brian Barberina cares about winning. I'm not sure he's ever gone in there to win. He just wants to go in and he wants to punch you in the face more times than you punch him. I love Brian Barberina because I love his mentality. I love his approach. I love his style. I love his beard. I love it all. Because I just appreciate guys like that. You know what I mean? Like he just goes in and throws down. He may not be a legend by age, but he's a legend in my heart.
Okay. All right. So this is the Anthony Smith Legends division. Like you decide who can and can't fight each other.
So I don't think we need to even call it a division. Let's just match these guys appropriately in fights that A, I think people want to see, B, fights that are super competitive, and let's not run our legends and the people that have kind of put their, you know, blood, sweat, and tears in this game. Let's not run them into buzzsaws every single time and then, you know, have them limp out of here face down and embarrassed with nothing left, you know? I don't necessarily like to watch that.
Breaking news. Manscaped is now selling beard products. That's right. They've gone from the waist to the face to help you replace that bulky razor with their brand new Beard Hedger Pro Kit. They've created the best tools for you to turn heads with a clean, perfectly groomed, and conditioned beard. Finally, tame your mane by going to manscaped.com and using our code BISBANG20 for 20% off plus free shipping. The kit is about to change your life, right? The Beard Hedger Pro Kit has made it easier than ever to craft your signature look. It all starts with the Beard Hedger. This thing is the juggernaut of fixing faces. First off, it's waterproof, it's cordless like every Manscaped, but this thing has a rotary wheel, so it gives you 20 different cutting lengths. You can go like 8, 8.5, 7, 7.5, right? And just cut it down to the exact length that you want. You don't have to switch out different heads, tons of add-ons, all that extra crap that has deterred me from trimming my own beard in the past. Not a problem here. Just turn the wheel, you're good to go. 20 lengths, it's never been so easy to find your signature beard look. Plus, the trimmer has a titanium-coated T-blade that is tough on hair, but it's smooth on your face, leading to single-stroke efficiency that brings satisfaction one stroke at a time. And the Pro Kit is much more than the trimmer, though. It comes with 4 dermatologist-tested formulations for your post-trim care. It has the beard shampoo and conditioner. I use it every day. All your hair is different. Your beard hair is much more coarse and easier to damage. That's why the kit has shampoo and conditioner specially designed to moisturize, reduce ingrown hairs, and replenish your natural oils, promoting beard health. The kit also has a beard oil, a nutrient-infused oil that relieves dryness both on the beard and the skin beneath while adding a little shimmer and shine to liven up the look. And I'll tell you, it helps with the itch too, right? Like that, throw that on there, boom, no more beard itch. Cap it off with their Beard Balm, a pomade that shapes, styles, and moisturizes, bringing the amazing scent of fresh eucalyptus, rosemary, and lavender essential oils. The Pro Beard Kit also comes with 3 free gifts, a beard brush, a comb, and scissors. You know, in case you got like one little flyaway, boom, run the comb through it, then hit it with the scissors, you're good to go. You can get 20% off and free shipping with our code BISPING20 at manscaped.com. Once again, that's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com when you use our code BISPING20. The Manscaped Beard Hedger Pro Kit, the premier solution to face grooming. Let's get back into it.
Oh my God. Okay. This one stands out to me. I'm just scrolling around. Guys, look, Michael's not here to keep this goddamn train on the tracks. So I'm just bouncing all over the place. I don't give a shit. You know what I mean? If Michael's mad about it, he get better Wi-Fi. <I don't, laughs> he's the one that keeps this train on the tracks.
His Wi-Fi is so bad he can't watch this episode.
Right. Dude, thank God, because he'll be pissed about this. I'm gonna talk about this real quick, and then you can throw out the next one. I'll let you guide me back into some sort of fucking something that makes sense around here. Did you?
Oh, we're in trouble.
Yeah. Hey, did you see Bryce Mitchell's Instagram when he was talking about the Super Bowl?
Oof.
He was talking about how, I don't remember exactly how he phrased it to begin with, but essentially that the Super Bowl performance, the halftime show. By the way, go Chiefs. Sorry, Eagles fans. That's just how it goes. But that's what I'm talking about, Harrington. You got to be a winner. You got to be a winner. Me, you, and Tech Nine. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. You got the Islam beard?
Yeah. I wish I could grow a beard. Bryce Mitchell is going off. I love Bryce Mitchell. Politics aside, I don't even care what Bryce Mitchell stands for. That's his own business. But I love listening to him go off on his Instagram all the time, because there's something to be said for someone who's just unapologetically himself. You know, I don't always agree with what he says, but I can appreciate someone who just gets on there. He's just his country self doing his own thing. But he was going off about the halftime show, about how he thought it was Satanism and it was an evil show, and someone on there had the 6 painted on their forehead, and essentially, there was a battle between good and evil going on there, and God damn it, Bryce Mitchell wasn't having it.
Dude, he had one, and it's like, I don't know, but the flip side of it, right? On the flip side, if you're sitting there being like, there's actual demon worship going on, and I need to let people know about it. Like, if you think it's your job as a Christian to inform the world that there is demon, like, I feel like he's not doing enough. You know, like, why is he not?
Listen, this is a man that choked a deer unconscious one time out in the field. He spun his testicles up in a drill one time. I'm not questioning anything he does because you're going to confuse yourself. You're going to confuse yourself. Brian, how do you feel about the Satanism that was allegedly going on in the halftime show?
I don't know. I just feel like we're being openly mocked by the people who decide these things.
So you're with Bryce?
It's just silly, man. It's just, I think it's trolling. Like, it's part trolling, part whatever nonsense. I don't know.
Think Bryce is trolling on it?
No, I think.
I was like, no, that motherfucker. For real.
No, Bryce is not real.
No, Bryce is
absolutely 100%. He means every word he says. And here we go.
A video about all this satanic symbolism that you've seen, like at the halftime show, for all y'all people who watch foosball. You know, I don't watch foosball, but I seen the halftime show, and it's just blatant Satanism. I mean, they're dressed up like devils. You know, one chick's got a six on her forehead. Guys, if you cannot see that these people worship Satan, pause it.
Was the one chick that had a six on her forehead? Talking about Rihanna?
He meant Rihanna has a six head. He just didn't know how to say it right.
I still think it's funny he called Rihanna that one chick.
I think that's
like, not that she's not the whole goddamn show.
It just really goes to show you his bumpkinness, you know? Don't hurt me. He's really good at fighting.
I love me some Bryce Mitchell. All right, let's get Bryce out of here. Is there any I don't think we've done enough non-MMA stories here, Harrington.
All right, let's see here.
What do you think? We should do another one? Give me a good one. Give me the best one.
All right. All right, so I'm not sure. All right, we're going to save number one for when Mike's here because he sent that one in. But number three.
No, we should do it just to piss him off.
Yeah?
No, I'm kidding.
All right, number three. Tell me if you would let any of your kids do this. It had to have been filmed by a parent. But a three-year-old, right, hooked up a camera to the top of a car and used his little, like, you know, Fisher Price iPad to drive a Ferrari. Brian, just scroll to the right there. You can pull up the video.
There's a video of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's badass. No, I've seen this kid before. He also has like a golf cart or like a little miniature four wheeler or something like that. And he can back like jet skis all the way up the driveway and back like the jet skis right into that garage right there. This kid's he's a little stud with very clearly rich parents for sure. I mean, you know, could my kids do that? No, because I don't have a fucking Ferrari.
Dude, that's crazy.
I bet if his bing was here, he'd probably be like, yeah, I deal with my kids, my Ferrari all the time.
Yeah, Lucas drives the Tesla regularly.
Right, all the time. All the time.
Oh, man.
How mad do you think he is that we're doing this show without him?
Oh, absolutely furious.
Yeah, well.
Couldn't be more livid.
He's definitely pissed because he's like, well, they're going to run this motherfucker into the ground.
Yeah.
He's going to be all fired up. The numbers are going to be shit and it's going to be our fault.
Well, we do have some questions for the end if you guys, you know, need a parachute.
Okay, so that's what we're going to do. When this thing starts going off the off the rails, we're going to go to we're going to go do some goddamn questions. Let's do one more MMA one before we get into questions. We won't drag this out too long. We just wanted to get one out for you guys. Just because we promised one and with Mike being out, well, we figured we'd get one quick one in. So let's do another MMA one. Is there something that's pressing? Is there something that we've...
How about Conor Chandler is going to be at 155, which is wild because Conor McGregor is going to have to cut a limb off to make that.
Well, he's got 6 months to do it because he's got 6 months of clean tests he's got to be taking since he's back in the pool. I was a little bit shocked to see that Dana came out and said it was at 155, though.
I did see today that Conor McGregor still has no USADA tests booked or logged.
Yeah,
in
I mean,
2023.
That's wild. The more time that goes, they did say he's back in the pool though. So I think he just has to be in the pool for 6 months. I don't think that 6 months starts from the time that they, like, I don't think it starts with like the first test. I think it's you enter the pool. Then I think you're just you have to have 6 months in the pool.
You don't have to take a test to get in the pool.
No. You know how many guys would fail? You don't even have to be clean.
That's wild.
I think, and I don't know this for a fact, but I think that there's, I mean, what happens if you get a short notice fight, right? What happens if you, like, you've been out on the regional scene doing your thing, or you maybe you haven't fought for 3 or 4 years and you've been on some whatever, like, and then some you get a short notice. Powder. Yeah, and then you get a short notice fight. Like, I don't know how all that works, but I think you just have to be in the pool for 6 months. I don't necessarily know that, like, I don't think that 6 months starts at your first test.
You have to be in the pool for 6 months and 2 clean tests.
Ah.
And
so over the course of that, dirty? I mean, just over the course of that 6 months, you have to be able to produce 2 clean tests.
Ah, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering if, like, just say someone retires, maybe they weren't planning on coming back, but they actually retire and they're taking some sort of banned substance to help themselves heal or whatever it is, whatever their excuse is. And then they want to get back in the pool. Like, you can't expect that person to have clean tests initially. I'm sure that, like, by the end of that 6 months, you have to be continually test clean. I would guess. I don't. I'm just making shit up at this point. I don't actually know. I'm just guessing.
We got to get your USADA doc on the show next time they randomly show up at your house.
Dude, I've tried, and he won't come on. They're not allowed to.
Yeah, tried filming him.
Yeah, I tried filming him.
What do you think about this? Dana saying that there is he's open to the possibility of that fight being at Cowboy Stadium, 80,000 strong in the heart of Dallas, Texas.
Is Cowboy Stadium a dome?
I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's a retractable roof because God needs to be able to see his favorite team play. I think.
Well, no matter what, I think you got to Dana's. I think a lot of the reason Dana's never done any soccer stadiums in Europe or London has been because of the weather. It rains every other day and none of those soccer stadiums are covered. So if it has a retractable roof, I think that, I mean, I don't know why not. I mean, I would imagine they're not going to make that decision until they see how the ratings are going on the show. I would guess if the ratings are going really well and this show's crazy popular and it's going really well, I would guess that would be something that would be on the books, you know, but if it's not doing well, I think that the show and how popular it is indicative of how the fight is probably going to go as well. I think those two things are probably tied to each other, but I think that's a huge fight. I think it's massive. I would love to have it. I would love to just be a part of it, even just working for ESPN. I think that would be something that would be crazy. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine that? Like a UFC event at the Cowboy Stadium would be insane. And how goddamn cool for Connor to be the, you know, he's always talked about that though. You think if Connor loses, he retires?
Probably.
I don't know if his ego will let him retire on a loss.
That's fair.
You know, I think he'd always threaten coming back, and you know, and then eventually maybe years down the road, like an old rival, you know, RDA is looking to have his last fight and Connor's like, fuck it, I'll fight you now. Tony. You know, like,
yeah, like drag Tony out.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. I hope not. But like,
I mean, they talked about it for a little bit. Like Tony was one of the options for the Ultimate Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I heard? I don't know this for a fact, but I heard this the other day that, and it kind of makes sense because when Chandler was on here, he genuinely didn't know that he was going to be coach. I mean, they announced it just a few days later. So, but he had no idea. I heard that they were in really close talks with Nate Diaz.
Well, that would have been interesting.
That initially the idea was Connor versus Nate. So I don't know what all that looked like, but anyway, long story short, that fell through and didn't work out. But I think that was plan A, was they're wanting it to be Connor and Nate, and then the Nate deal didn't go through.
And he decided he wanted to go box Canelo. This is just
it's a bigger bag, I guess.
Bad ideas, dude. Yeah,
it's a bigger bag, though. All right.
Well, I mean, given how hard he okay.
What do you think? Think we wrap this shit up?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You've not gone to number three in the MMA notes, so I'm thinking it's just not. There's nothing there.
Hold on a second. Hold on. Let me pull my notes up again, Harrington. Maybe I missed a good one. I don't want to miss a good one here. Number three. Let's see here. What do we got here? Oh my God! How did I miss that? Yeah, let's go. Let's do that, and then we'll go to questions. Yeah, let's go. Oh God,
this is probably one of the coolest moments from UFC 284.
I talked to him yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah? So wild. Yeah, let's play this. I love this.
Wait, who are we talking about now? Is it Aldo again or?
Shut the fuck up! Oh, what? Shut the fuck up!
Oh! Are you... oh, dude!
Shut up! Are you serious?
Wow! Let's go!
Wow. Look how upset he is. I love it. He's just.
Oh, man. He's got his kid coming in, hugs his kid. Oh, that's incredible.
That's incredible.
To watch.
No, you know, man. He had no idea that mm-hmm. any of this was going to happen, obviously, but everyone around him did. So they had all kind of set him up, and the UFC had told him that they wanted to do like a where are they now kind of story on him. And that they were going to bring him in live on the broadcast and say, you know, here's Jens Pulver, here's what he's doing, you know, whatever. He's been doing this Twitch stream for the UFC for a while now, full time. I think he streams four times a week on Twitch. So if you guys are on Twitch or that's something you guys get into, head over to the UFC Twitch. Jens Pulver's over there killing it. So I think he's really interactive with the chat too, from what it seems like. So, you know, he told me yesterday that he had no clue, and they'd asked him about this, you know, where are they now thing. And all the times they'd asked him to do it before, he'd always said no, because he wasn't happy with where he was in life. And he went in this long, you know, emotional, you know, kind of explanation to me about how at the end of his career, he really regretted it and how it happened. And he was just trying to get a win. And he just had, you know, he just kept losing and his life had fallen apart, and he just had no more self-respect for himself. And he was just really unhappy and kind of self-destructing. And, you know, he said he was super overweight, and I don't remember what he called himself. It was really funny though. Essentially he's just fat as shit. And, you know, and then this Twitch stream had come back in, and he auditioned for it and he got it. And now he's analyzing fights and, you know, doing live broadcasts while the fights are going on. And it's really changed his life. Like getting back into the sport. I thought it was a cool little situation where like the sport had kind of ruined his life, essentially, in his mind, it had taken everything from him, all of his self-respect, all of his pride, you know, he had nothing left. And then the thing that like gets him back on track is like getting back into this game just on a different side of it. So it was cool to just listen to him talk. And he told me some stories about like just moments that he really enjoyed. And it was like old Miletic days, you know, like the battles with Matt Hughes and, you know, Jeremy Horn was there. This is in the, you know, Tim Sylvia's prime. And so just listening to the war stories was super cool. But I'm just really happy for him because it's something that he's wanted for a long time. But I don't think that any moment before now would have been a good moment because he wasn't in a great place, you know, a while ago. So I think the timing is perfect. He's pulled his life together. He's in a really positive place. Like, you know, he was talking about how fat he was and he was out of shape and he was doing all this other shit. And then like when I was getting ready to talk to him, he was like, really like, I'm intermittent fasting and I gotta get my workout in. Like, it's hard to even talk to him because he has such a schedule now. Before he had no schedule. He had nowhere to be and nothing to do because he just wasn't doing shit with his life. So it was just cool, man. It was really cool. It was cool to see his reaction. When he was asked before, and I've heard him say this, you know, people would ask him, Jens, when do you think you're going to get in to the Hall of Fame? And he would always say, I'm probably not going to get in. I didn't do enough. So it was cool to, like, I don't know, just see him, and his manager and I are friends. So I knew about it like 2 weeks ago. So it was cool to, like, yeah, it was like everyone knew but him. It was cool to just like in anticipation, just, you know, he's just on his little stream. And then when he realizes it's him and he's crying with his son and like, asking his son, like, you know, I just, you know, or saying to his son, rather, like, you know, I just wanted you to be proud of your dad. Like, Shit's heavy. It's getting dusty up in here right now.
Definitely an emotional moment. That was so cool, man.
It was.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's all I got.
That's it. All right. Well, go ahead and give your question spiel.
If you're enjoying this show on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find podcasts, make sure you subscribe, leave a 5-star rating, positive review on those platforms. It helps us out. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe to the channel and leave a, subscribe to the channel and hit that notification bell so you find out whenever a new episode comes out. Also, if you want to catch over 400 episodes you can't find anywhere else, head to gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM, get yourself a 7-day free trial, and check out over 20 great shows on the network.
Harrington. Where should they send the questions to?
bympod@gmail.com.
They should probably record them, make them funny, and make them unique and send them to bympod@gmail.com. That's what they should do, Harrington.
That's 100% what they should do. Yeah, Brian, if they're not doing it, what are you doing?
What are you doing with your life? Let's ride.
All right. So first one we got here is from Trey.
What's going on, gang? Trey here. Quick question. Silly, but that was just on my mind. Okay, so if you had to choose out of these matchups, which one would you pick? You could only strike against Volkanovski, or you could only grapple and wrestle against Islam. Which matchup would you pick? Me personally, I'm going to go ahead and wrestle with Islam because ain't nobody got time to be trying to strike with Volkanovski. I'm good. I'm going to just get choked out and give it up. You feel me? Less head trauma. But who would you rather fight?
All right. Well, first of all, Trey, thanks for the question. You need to put a new battery in your smoke detector because they can hear that thing beeping in the back and you need to keep your people safe. So you need to change your goddamn batteries. All right, my friend. Man, I'd probably rather strike with Volkanovski. I think you have more opportunities there. You know, like if you're just you got a better opportunity to catch someone with like a punch or a kick or something like that. It's hard to catch really dominant wrestlers.
Well, like, of course,
wrestling isn't something you can really get lucky. You know what I mean?
You are literally three of them stacked on top of each other.
Oh, me personally? I'll fight them both at the same time. I'm just kidding. That's a joke. Goddamn media people, is just a joke. I'd rather strike Volkanovski because I'm 14 times his height.
Nice.
There we go.
I'm not a fighter. So, yeah, I'm going to get taken into deep waters by Islam. Obviously, I'm on Trey's side, dude. Like, I don't need to be striking with it. I don't need to get my lights knocked out by Volkanovski. Just let me Connor tap just real quick. Real quick.
Whoa. Connor's going to be so pissed at you for saying that.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Okay. Well. Check Twitter.
Yeah, I feel like
my name first.
Yeah, right. I feel like you would I would be killed by either one of them pretty quickly, so
you know. So neither.
I just would avoid the whole situation entirely.
Yeah, can I bring a gun? Is there a rule for a civilian getting a gun?
No.
Is it explicitly written in the rules of MMA that you can't bring a gun? Have people just been overlooking this?
They could have. Maybe it's just overlooked. You know, I got a friend, Chris Camozzi, used to always ask me all the time, is it illegal to like strike someone with your nut cup? And I still haven't got an answer. Every time I've asked a commissioner, the only time I've ever thought about it is right before I'm about to fight. And they always look at me like I'm stupid, but they never have an answer.
If you can use it for leverage in an arm bar, you should be able to strike with it.
Yeah. Like, can you go north, south and just crush someone?
I mean, didn't we see a guy do that? Just hump a guy's head?
We have seen somebody hump a guy's head.
I would have to assume that's the attack.
Nice.
All right. So this one's a little heavier. It's from Brandon.
Okay.
What's up, guys? It's Brandon from Chicago. Within the past year, I've made a pretty big lifestyle change. I used to weigh 336 pounds. Now my goal to hit 170.
Let's go.
93 pounds so far, and my biggest motivation is my mom. Unfortunately, she passed away last night on her birthday, lost a battle to stage 4 breast cancer, and I promised her that I would make her proud. I'm using her as my biggest motivation. I was just wondering, guys, Throughout your careers, you've battled through lots of adversity, and both of you have made it out on top. Just wondering, do you have something specific for motivation that you've always held on to keep powering through and pushing forward? Thank you, guys. Have a great one. And Harrington, you're going to be a great dad. Stay blessed, guys.
Damn. All right, fuck it. Let's get deep. Well, Brandon, I'm really sorry to hear about the passing of your mom. I'm sure everyone on here knows that I lost my mom last May. She was my, you know, best friend, biggest supporter, biggest inspiration. So I know exactly how you feel, and I wouldn't say that it's gonna get any easier. But the days won't seem quite as long, you know, as you put more and more time in between yesterday and today, you know. So it's, I'm just gonna be honest with you, bro. Motivation is fucking made up. It's made up. It's, motivation is a made up word. It's a made up fucking thing to make people that don't want to do shit think that they have a reason to do shit that matters. You don't need to be motivated. You know, like, I don't need to be motivated to go to practice. You have to get up. You got to put one foot in front of the other and walk out the fucking door and go get your workout in. That's it. We're in this weird generation these days. We're in this weird time where, you know, influencers and famous people and self-help doctors and motivational speakers have tried to convince you that you need to feel good about doing something. You don't have to feel good about it. There's nothing that's ever said in the history of fucking ever that you got to feel good about doing something before you do it. You have to be an adult and you have to keep your goals in mind, and you're not going to feel good about it every day. I don't want to practice every single day. I don't want to run myself into car accidents every single day. There's been plenty of fights that I've been in that I've walked out on pay-per-view, gone in, got the goddamn job done and walked back to the locker room. And all day I didn't feel like doing it, because sometimes you just wake up and you don't fucking feel like it. You want to lay in bed. You want to be fucking lazy. You want to eat potato chips and watch bad TV and cartoons. But that's not how you move from one place to another. That's not how you better yourself. That's not how you better your situation. That's not how you better your kids. That's not how you put your kids in a better school. That's not how nothing positive happens. So my message is to you is it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to not feel good about it. It's okay to not feel like doing it. But that doesn't mean you don't get to do it. You still got to put one foot in front of the other one and keep fucking walking. Get to every single workout. Be at the gym every time that you're supposed to be at the gym. You need to set your goddamn schedule and do it. And some days you're going to feel good, and some days you're not. And on the days that you don't feel that good, you still have to do it anyways. And that's part of being an adult. And that's, I tell people this all the time, like, you don't have to feel good about it to do it. You just have to fucking do it. That's it. And afterwards, you can evaluate how you felt about it once you've already done it, but not until you've already done it. So I hope you send in another video. Keep us updated on your weight loss. Good luck. Don't be too hard on yourself. Condolences to you and your family on your mom. And yeah, definitely keep us updated. I'd like to follow along.
All right. So we got, we either have one or two more, depending on how long this one rolls. But we got one here from Chet.
Michael, Anthony. So I recently celebrated my 37th birthday and came to the realization that not only am I an old bastard, a fat bastard. So I figured I should maybe start exercising a little bit, eating a little better, and cutting back on the drinking. However, I also realized I'm a lazy bastard. No way I'll do all three. So my question is, of those three things, is there one that stands out that would benefit me the most? Or is it hopeless and should I just keep on being lazy, fat, and drunk? Appreciate your guys' work. Look forward to hearing your answer. Fuck you, Harrington.
That's a great question. I suppose if you had to pick one, you can't be lazy. You can be fat and you can be a drunk bastard, but you can't be lazy too. And I would suspect that if you're less lazy, you're going to be less fat. And if you're less lazy, you're going to have less time to drink. So you're going to be less drunk. You can be less drunk. So that's a pretty simple answer for me. I'd just be less lazy, keep drinking, and be fat.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like there is a thing where it's like, I worked out today, so I can eat, you know, a bucket of KFC fried chicken and drink 10 beers because I worked out today.
Sounds like he's going to eat a bucket of fried chicken and drink 10 beers anyway, so he might as well get a workout in.
Sounds like we understand why Harrington is the way he is.
I just look for these last two guys. I mean, you know, Bisping always like hates on this idea, but if you're of sound mind, body, and like at a reasonable enough age, take an amateur boxing fight. Just put an amateur boxing fight on the cards, you know, something where you can wear headgear. You're going to have the mouthpiece in 2 minute rounds, nothing crazy, but the work leading up to it, you will like there's a switch that goes off in your head where it's like, neither of us can fight. So whichever one works harder leading up to the fight is going to win. Right. And that is the only motivation I've ever had to get in any kind of decent shape as an adult.
Preferably you fight another fat podcast producer. But
if that guy decides to take an amateur boxing match, I'll go to it.
Ooh. So,
I'm telling you, I'll referee it if they let me. I don't give a shit. But that means he's going to have to keep calling in, keeping us updated, letting us know how it goes. See some pad work. Not just going to have me show up in the middle of goddamn Idaho somewhere, where the fuck he lives, watch him just be out of shape fighting some guy. You got to be in shape. You take an amateur boxing match, I'll referee it. All right, Brian, let's do one more.
Throw him big old drunk haymakers and shit.
Let's go. Let's go. As long as he buys the beer too, though.
All right, so now we got a silly question, and this one is from Frederick.
Hey, hi, guys. My name is Frederick. I'm from Slovakia, and I have a question to basically all of you, to whomever it may concern. And so my question is about slap fighting. And so I heard you guys talking about the sport on one of the previous shows, and you guys seem to be quite huge fans of the sport, but I have quite of a problem with the sport, which I would like to ask you about. And my problem is that it seems kind of unfair because from what I understand, the way this works is that these guys are trading slaps, right? And it seems to me like the guy who goes first has to have quite a bit of an advantage, right? Because he slaps the other guy, and the other guy only gets to respond after possibly suffering like a fairly huge concussion. So don't you think this is kind of a
problem? Not wrong.
Do you have some kind of possible solution for this, or do you think it's okay? Yeah, so any of you can answer, like Michael, Anthony, Brian, and Harrington. And yeah, thank you guys. I'm a huge fan. Fuck Harrington, all the stuff. Thank you.
I love that. Fuck Harrington, all the stuff. You know what I mean? It's like people are just getting so used to it. Like, yeah, you guys know the drill. Hey, Brian, see you guys later. Thanks for the question. Fuck you, Harrington. All those things. he's not wrong.
DMs a week.
Yeah, you know how many DMs I get to say fuck Harrington? It's hilarious. For real? Yeah, all the time. I'm going to start screenshotting them all and send them to you. Just so you feel good about yourself every day.
Yeah, that's sweet, dude. That's so nice.
I got your back, bro. He's not wrong though. I think the dude it's kind of like anything though, right? Like there's a lot of sports like that. Like football's a coin toss, you know, like.
Yeah, but there's two halves. So everybody's getting a kick at each half.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I don't know how you fix that. Would you go at the same time?
You just have to have like one of those.
Or fight science dummies. I'd let the UFC hire me. I'll slap the shit out of them both right before they start, and then they start even. But then the guy who goes first,
still
is an advantage.
Like because he's already concussed because he just got the shit slapped out of him by Anthony Smith, and then he's going in to fight like another dude.
Second one.
Yeah. So
it's got to be same time.
It's got to be same time. You gotta go at the same time.
Like a duel, like a old timey like pistol draw duel. Dude,
how weird can we make this? Well, let's put them on, I don't know, let's put them on like actual horses and just put them next to each other and let them joust, but it's only slapping.
Like at a running start. Like if you're watching, what's that movie with the
as they ride by each other, just whack. We just get this as weird as we can. I'm in.
Dana White needs to hire us as, you know, research for his new slap fighting empire.
Did you see the slap fighter that tested positive for cocaine and got suspended for 9 months?
Mm-hmm.
Listen,
nine months.
I would never let cocaine come between me and my slap fighting. Like, I thought that was a requirement. I can't believe they're not allowed to do that.
9 months is an ambitious ban for that sport, I would say.
I'm gonna be fair. I mean, I didn't know that they were drug tested.
I assume like, they weren't.
If you did, you never would have given that guy that coke.
Yeah. Well, if I mean, aren't they all on coke?
I thought that's what the powder they were putting their putting on their hands was.
Just numb their hands. I'm joking.
I know that the commission was overseeing it all. It's sanctioned, but I mean, how do you? Anyways, I think Luke Thomas had a pretty funny tweet today that said something about I'm really sick of MMA media telling me about the cocaine use of a slap fight or something like that. It was really funny. The tweet was funny. All right, guys. Well, we are about I don't know, an hour and 20 minutes or so in. And I'm gonna sign off. It's snowy here, so we're gonna go sledding and gotta tend to my chickens. So we'll go tend to my chickens and we appreciate you guys. I don't know when Michael is gonna be back, but I'm assuming that we're gonna figure out his connection issue. If not, stuck with me and Harrington and Brian again on Monday. So good luck. Everyone be safe. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on the other side.